Thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone. Lydia, alcoholic. Grateful to be here, grateful because of a loving God who operates with in grace and not mercy with me today, and there's a difference. To those who are celebrating, congratulations. That was awesome. A lot of day counters. And I can't see the gentleman that had the day. That indicated he had the day, but I want to welcome you. I want to welcome, anyone who's new. And we've been praying for you, right? There's either a silence at the beginning or the ending of a meeting, and it's a moment of silence for you. So, as I was told, welcome home and please stay with us. We need you. First of all, thank you for doing the serenity set aside or the set aside prayer. I did the set aside prayer before I came on as well because I want my higher power, my God, to speak through me and to set aside any thoughts or ideas that I think I know something about this program. As I indicated, my name is, this is intimidating, by the way. Oh my God, there's so many faces. But I thank you all for being here and for celebrating my birthday. I'm supposed to share with you guys in a general way what happened, what it used to be like, and what happened now. So I will say that I am a New Yorker, Puerto Rican, and my first experience with drinking was at 5 years old. Puerto Ricans have a tradition of making a traditional eggnog spiked. Eggnog for the Christmas seasons. And what I ended up doing is, as I was serving my parents' guests this drink, I thought it was eggnog. And I decided everybody is drinking eggnog except me. And so I decided to take a drink. And at first, I thought it was just rotten eggnog. But, after a few cups, I started to like it. And unbeknownst to me, I had my first alcoholic experience at that age. Didn't quite understand what was happening, but that was my first experience. And I jokingly say this, I'm Puerto Rican, so Bacardi runs through my veins. My experience with alcohol resumed at the age of 12. I came into a family who, are known drug addicts and alcoholics, and my friends were my cousins. And so what they did is they reintroduced me to alcohol and other mind-altering substances, but alcohol specifically, because what was explained to me is if you are going to partake, you are to partake with us so we can see what it is that you're doing. And I will say that from the age of 12, with a brief period in between, I continued to drink and use until I was 48 years old. And I'm 58 now. So, the only time, like I said, I had sobriety for a brief period. The only time that I stopped drinking was when I found out I was pregnant with my daughter at the age of 21. I did so during that period, and while I was also breastfeeding her, because I did not want her to receive milk that was contaminated in any specific way, but my drinking was always continuous. I have experiences with lots of jails and prison. And, with those things, I would never concede that I had a problem. My life was always filled with drama. And so I just thought that the things were happening to me, and the unmanageability of my life was just due to my demeanor, my behavior, my actions, and never really associated alcohol or anything else as being the problem. And so I did this openly, without hesitation. I drank every day. I will tell you that I drank every day, and I want to get into like the solution. I don't like staying in my drunkalogue too long because I find that the solution is what's kept me here with you all for 10 years. What I will say is that there was an act of providence that happened for me 10 years ago. I suffered from insomnia. And so one night, I don't know if you guys remember, They used to have the telemercials, whatever they were called, infomercials, and they had a guy with a white coat, a stethoscope, and said, if you or any of your family members or loved ones has a problem, call this number, right? Now, I had been seeing this infomercial. I cannot tell you for how long and how many times, but there was one night, and I like to call that my first act of providence. And something led me to call. And I called the number, I answered some questions, and really wasn't planning on doing anything. I figured that was cute. That was my first step, and that's all I really need to do at this particular moment. And no sooner do I hang up that my phone is ringing off the hook from treatment facilities asking me if I would like to come in. And I'm like, wait a minute. I just called. This is moving a little bit too fast. And slow your roll. But what I managed to do was also get some numbers. And I commenced to call and see. Now, I wouldn't concede that I was alcoholic or anything else, but I was curious. See, I had always been told that my condition was mind over matter, that I've got a strong character. And if I wanted to, I could really stop if I wanted to. But what I did find is that I could not. I made a lot of promises to loved ones. To my daughter, employers. I made a lot of promises to myself and to God that today I won't pick up, I won't drink. And so curiosity led me into a facility. Now, that facility had all the bells and whistles because I refused to think of myself going to a facility that was a jail or some type of asylum. I needed some level of freedom. I was already trying to dictate how my recovery was going to look like, what I thought it should be, and how it should work. But I managed to go to a facility. It's no longer there, and it saddens me. It was Promises in Malibu. And while I was there, I will tell you that I had a very long detox, a very painful detox, and I almost died from the detox due to some other contributing factors. Now, while I was there, I would not associate myself as an alcoholic. I would attend meetings, I'd meet in group with my therapist, individual or otherwise, and I refused to raise my hand and say I was an alcoholic. And why is that? I was looking at the differences versus the similarities. And I would say, well, I didn't almost kill someone in the car while I was drunk driving, so I'm not a drunk. I would always look at the differences and not the similarities. And because of that, I would not identify. Every day I was going to leave. And if it wasn't for the angels that were sent down, the techs, they were really, really awesome and patient with me that kept me there. But that was my thing. I treated it more like a little retreat vacation than a rehabilitation. And so there was nothing that I was receiving. I cannot tell you what they shared. I cannot tell you what they told me to do because I refused to do any of it. If there was an AA meeting that they would take us to, I'd be in the bathroom. I shut the door and they'd knock on the door, Lydia, it's time for the meeting. And I would tell them I'm either taking a crap or about to take a shower, but anything to circumvent attending a meeting until there was one day. Another act of providence happened and led me to a meeting in the Pacific Palisades. Now, this was the first meeting I had ever attended. I only planned to be at that rehabilitation place for 1 month. I stayed there for four. But I went to this meeting, and in there, I heard someone share from the podium for the first time, and I immediately got identification. I was able to identify with this person. This person too was from New York. This person too was from New York. And a lot of her story is very similar to mine culturally. And I started paying attention. You know, her story was such that I'm like amazed that here's a person before me looking great, sharp, healthy, she's laughing, and she's sober. Now, that sponsor is here with me today. She's the one that took 36 years. But I received a lot of I don't know how to sing it. I identified. I was able to hear the similarities this time instead of the differences. And since this place indicated that I needed a sponsor to recover, I called her. And while I was there, she did come to visit me. And I came with all the books that the rehab facility had brought, had given to me. And when I met her, I told her, they gave me all these books. These people don't know what they're doing. I'm not a cookie cutter insurance patient, I'm very visual, I'm very book smart, and we're not doing any of this. And what she told me was that I sounded really arrogant and I was offended, right? Here was somebody who did not know me, was meeting me for the first time, yet called me arrogant. And I'm like, you don't know me. You don't even know me. But what she did tell me to do is to grab my big book and she took me to the blank page. And this is where I start every time I work. The big book is the blank page. And what she asked me was, what do you see there? And I told her nothing. And what I was told is, that's exactly what you know about recovery, nothing. And while I was upset, I had to laugh and concede that she was right. Now, from that point on, I finished another month at the rehab facility. She did tell me if I was interested in recovery to call her as soon as I got out. And that's what I did. The moment I got, out to my mother's house, come to find out she lived 15 minutes away from my mother. Look at that. Look at God. And I commenced to work with her immediately, right? Now, I still wasn't sold on step one, that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. I didn't see my unmanageability as being my alcohol problem. What we did is, from going from the blank page in the preface, they asked three questions. She asked me to examine my relationship with alcohol. No one had ever told me to do that. And so after reading the preface, there's three questions. It asks you to read one of the 42 personal stories in the back. And the questions are, yes, that happened to me. Yes, I felt that way too. And yes, perhaps this program can work for me too, right? In that moment, I was able to establish, identify my relationship with alcohol, and I had to concede some unmanageability, but not fully. What brought me into these rooms was curiosity more than anything. Curiosity led me in, and the steps led me to stay. Thank God for good sponsorship. Two, with step two, came to believe that a power greater than me can restore me to sanity. Well, that was challenging. See, I'm certified. I've got bipolar, I've got ADHD, all the letters in the alphabet, whatever you can think of, I've got it. But what the big book also tells me is that many of us do recover who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders if we have the capacity to be honest. So I was like, I had some idea of God, and I guess that's what they were referring to, and can, bring me back to sanity. Well, let's see. Let's see. Step three, made a decision to turn my will and my care over to this God of my understanding. I started to develop this God of my understanding through you and through the steps. I got to see how God was operating in your lives and how you all said that it was only an act of providence. And this God of your understanding that did for you what you couldn't do for yourself. This I thought was going to be a hard step because I'm going to turn it over to this power of my understanding. What'll happen to me? What about my own things that I utilized in order to go ahead and survive? But the question was really, was I living or was I surviving? And did I want to live? And turning my care, it's an invitation, as my sponsor says, is an invitation to have this partnership with this God. And why wouldn't I turn my care over to this power? I started to see that I can choose a God of my own understanding. And I never knew that I can do that. I borrowed everybody else's religion. It still fell short. I was extremely prejudicial. And I did not believe that that, in fact, was going to be what I needed in order to go ahead and recover. And so I got to identify my own conception of God. And today that companionship, that relationship that I have with my God, today is what steers this ship. It's been a slow process. But they say progress, not perfection, correct? So, this is an evolving relationship that I get to have with my creator today, and it grows. And I learn more each day by uncovering, discovering, discarding more things as I go along. Four, I made a fearless and search for more inventory of ourselves. Oh, that I had heard about that step, and I was like, oh, now I really get to write down everybody's defects of character. Now I really get to get off my chest all the things that have been bothering me and why you guys had me drink. But little did I know, I was coming to find out more about me than anybody else. Now, my sponsor and I, we did it simultaneously. We did do our fifth along with my fourth. And thank God for the sponsorship that I have, because I'll tell you what, when it came down to my fifth step, we stayed 24 hours around the clock, right? I had discovered some things in my fourth step about myself, how selfish and self-centered I was, how ego was always disturbed, how I played victim. And how I truly victimized others. And I felt some sort of way. I saw some things about me that I did not like. And although I got to share it in step five, when I admitted to God, to myself, and to another human being the exact natures of my wrong, was when I was starting to feel a little free. I wasn't fully free because while we had done my fifth, 24 hours, we broke for potty breaks, meal breaks, and cigarette breaks. But see, I was still sitting in my crap. I have not been relieved yet. I'm still not free yet, because all I am is still on four and five, where I have acknowledged some things about myself. And I get to go towards that freedom in step six. By that time, I was like, I am so ready to have God remove all these, defects of character. I wanted to run to seven and eight, right? But in step seven, I got to humbly ask God to remove all these shortcomings, defects of character, shortcomings, good and bad. The seven-step prayer talks about, take all of me, good and bad. And I don't know what is a defect of character. I might think it's an asset. So I ask God to humbly remove those things. In step eight, I made a list of all the persons I had harmed and was willing to make amends to them all. Did that. It was a long list. I had index cards prepared with an opening, thanking them for taking the time to meet with me.
Few
And
minutes,
I
please.
did. Thank you. And I did my amends in person. I traveled to make my amends. I did those things because I really wanted to be free. And that's where I gained my freedom in step nine. Step 10, I continue to do on a daily basis. I continue to, pray and meditate to improve my conscious contact with my creator. And I'm thrilled because more and more things are being revealed on a daily basis. In step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I try to carry the message to those who are still sick and suffering. I will tell you this, that one of the greatest privileges and honors has been sponsoring. My sponsees keep me sober. They're a mirror. I get to see so many of my sponsees being a mirror, and it's so vital to my own recovery that I give away what was so freely given to me. And so I want to thank, I think it was, I don't know quite the person who went ahead and invited me here today to share, but thank you everyone for making a 12-step call on me. And I'm going to close it like Sponce does it. If no one has told you they loved you today, I really, really do. Thank you, everyone.